Chapter 98. Me in the anguish of my heart, O Father, turn to me, and seek a refuge in my love before it is too late. May have arrested them. Meaner and lower thoughts, as that his dead boy was now superseded by new ties, and he could forgive the having been supplanted in his affection, may have occasioned them. The mere association of her as an ornament, with all the ornament and pomp about him, may have been sufficient. But as he looked, he softened to her, more and more. As he looked, she became blended with the child he had loved, and he could hardly separate the two. As he looked, he saw her for an instant by a clearer and a brighter light, not bending over that child's pillow as his rival monstrous thought, but as the spirit of his home, and in the action tending himself no less, as he sat once more with his bowed down head upon his hand at the foot of the little bed. He felt inclined to speak to her, and call her to him. The words, "Florence, come here," were rising to his lips, but slowly and with difficulty. They were so very strange, when they were checked and stifled by a footstep on the stair. It was his wife's. She had exchanged her dinner dress for a loose robe, and unbound her hair, which fell freely about her neck. But this was not the change in her that startled him. "Florence, dear," she said, "I have been looking for you everywhere." As she sat down by the side of Florence, she stooped and kissed her hand. He hardly knew his wife. She was so changed. It was not merely that her smile was new to him, though that he had never seen, but her manner, the tone of her voice, the light of her eyes, the interest, and confidence, and winning wish to please, expressed in all this was not Edith. Softly, "Dear Mama, Papa is asleep." It was Edith now. She looked towards the corner where he was, and he knew that face and manner very well. "I scarcely thought you could be here, Florence." Again, how altered and how softened, in an instant. "I left here early," pursued Edith, "purposely to sit upstairs and talk with you. But, going to your room, I found my bird was flown, and I have been waiting there ever since, expecting its return." If it had been a bird, indeed, she could not have taken it more tenderly and gently to her breast than she did Florence. "Come, dear. Papa will not expect to find me, I suppose, when he wakes," hesitated Florence. "Do you think he will, Florence?" said Edith, looking full upon her. Florence drooped her head, and rose, and put up her work basket. Edith drew her hand through her arm, and they went out of the room like sisters. Her very step was different and new to him, Mr. Dombey thought, as his eyes followed her to the door. He sat in his shadowy corner so long that the church clocks struck the hour 3 times before he moved that night. All that while his face was still intent upon the spot where Florence had been seated. The room grew darker as the candles waned and went out, but a darkness gathered on his face, exceeding any that the night could cast, and rested there. Florence and Edith, seated before the fire in the remote room where little Paul had died, talked together for a long time. Diogenes, who was of the party, had at first objected to the admission of Edith, and, even in deference to his mistress's wish, had only permitted it under growling protest. But, emerging by little and little from the anteroom, whither he had retired in dudgeon, he soon appeared to comprehend that with the most amiable intentions he had made one of those mistakes which will occasionally arise in the best regulated dogs' minds. As a friendly apology for which he stuck himself up on end between the two, in a very hot place in front of the fire, and sat panting at it, with his tongue out, and a most imbecile expression of countenance, listening to the conversation. It turned, at first, on Florence's books and favorite pursuits, and on the manner in which she had beguiled the interval since the marriage. The last theme opened up to her a subject which lay very near her heart, and she said, with the tears starting to her eyes, "Oh, Mama, I have had a great sorrow since that day. Apostrophe, you lay great sorrow, Florence. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. Poor Walter is drowned. Apostrophe, Florence spread her hands before her face, and wept with all her heart. Many as were the secret tears which Walter's fate had cost her, they flowed yet, when she thought or spoke of him. But tell me, dear, apostrophe, said Edith, soothing her. Who was Walter? What was he to you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he was my brother, mamma. After dear Paul died, we said we would be brother and sister. I had known him a long time from a little child. He knew Paul, who liked him very much. Paul said, almost at the last, take care of Walter, dear papa. I was fond of him. Walter had been brought in to see him, and was there then in this room. And did he take care of Walter? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Edith, sternly. Papa? He appointed him to go abroad. He was drowned in shipwreck on his voyage, apostrophe, said Florence, sobbing. Does he know that he is dead? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Edith. I cannot tell, mamma. I have no means of knowing. Dear mamma! Apostrophe, cried Florence, clinging to her as for help, and hiding her face upon her bosom, I know that you have seen apostrophe, stay. Stop, Florence. Apostrophe, Edith turned so pale, and spoke so earnestly, that Florence did not need a restraining hand upon her lips. Tell me all about Walter first. Let me understand this history all through. Apostrophe, Florence related it, and everything belonging to it, even down to the friendship of Mr. Toots, of whom she could hardly speak in her distress without a tearful smile, although she was deeply grateful to him. When she had concluded her account, to the whole of which Edith, holding her hand, listened with close attention, and when a silence had succeeded, Edith said, what is it that you know I have seen, Florence? Apostrophe, apostrophe, that I am not, apostrophe, said Florence, with the same mute appeal, and the same quick concealment of her face as before, that I am not a favorite child, mamma. I never have been. I have never known how to be. I have missed the way, and had no one to show it to me. Oh, let me learn from you, how to become dear to papa, teach me. You, who can so well. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and clinging closer to her, with some broken fervent words of gratitude and endearment, Florence, relieved of her sad secret, wept long, but not as painfully as of yore, within the encircling arms of her new mother. Pale even to her lips, and with a face that strove for composure until its proud beauty was as fixed as death, Edith looked down upon the weeping girl, and once kissed her. Then gradually disengaging herself, and putting Florence away, she said, stately, and quiet as a marble image, and in a voice that deepened as she spoke, but had no other token of emotion in it. Florence, you do not know me. Heaven forbid that you should learn from me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not learn from you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Florence, in surprise. That I should teach you how to love, or be loved, heaven forbid. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Edith. If you could teach me, that were better, but it is too late. You are dear to me, Florence. I did not think that anything could ever be so dear to me, as you are in this little time. Apostrophe, she saw that Florence would have spoken here, so checked her with her hand, and went on. I will be your true friend always. I will cherish you, as much, if not as well as anyone in this world could. You may trust in me, I know it and I say it, dear, with the whole confidence even of your pure heart. There are hosts of women whom he might have married, better and truer in all other respects than I am, Florence. But there is not one who could come here, his wife, whose heart could beat with greater truth to you than mine does. Apostrophe, I know it, dear mamma. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Florence. From that first most happy day I have known it. Apostrophe, most happy day. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Edith seemed to repeat the words involuntarily, and went on. Though the merit is not mine, for I thought little of you until I saw you, let the undeserved reward be mine in your trust and love. And in this, Florence, On the first night of my taking up my abode here, I am led on as it is best I should be, to say it for the first and last time. Florence, without knowing why, felt almost afraid to hear her proceed, but kept her eyes riveted on the beautiful face so fixed upon her own. Never seek to find in me, said Edith, laying her hand upon her breast, what is not here. Never, if you can help it, Florence, fall off from me, because it is not here. Little by little you will know me better, and the time will come when you will know me, as I know myself. Then, be as lenient to me as you can, and do not turn to bitterness the only sweet remembrance I shall have. The tears that were visible in her eyes as she kept them fixed on Florence, showed that the composed face was but as a handsome mask, but she preserved it, and continued. I have seen what you say, and know how true it is. But believe me, you will soon, if you cannot now, there is no one on this earth less qualified to set it right or help you, Florence, than one. Never ask me why, or speak to me about it, or of my husband, more. There should be, so far, a division, and a silence between us two, like the grave itself. She sat for some time silent, Florence scarcely venturing to breathe meanwhile, as dim and imperfect shadows of the truth, and all its daily consequences, chased each other through her terrified, yet incredulous imagination. Almost as soon as she had ceased to speak, Edith's face began to subside from its set composure to that quieter and more relenting aspect, which it usually wore when she and Florence were alone together. She shaded it, after this change, with her hands, and when she arose, and with an affectionate embrace, bade Florence good night, went quickly, and without looking round. But when Florence was in bed, and the room was dark except for the glow of the fire, Edith returned, and saying that she could not sleep, and that her dressing room was lonely, drew a chair upon the hearth, and watched the embers as they died away. Florence watched them too from her bed, until they, and the noble figure before them, crowned with its flowing hair, and in its thoughtful eyes reflecting back their light, became confused and indistinct, and finally were lost in slumber. In her sleep, however, Florence could not lose an undefined impression of what had so recently passed. It formed the subject of her dreams, and haunted her, now in one shape, now in another, but always oppressively, and with a sense of fear. She dreamed of seeking her father in wildernesses, of following his track up fearful heights, and down into deep mines and caverns, of being charged with something that would release him from extraordinary suffering she knew not what, or why, yet never being able to attain the goal, and set him free. Then she saw him dead, upon that very bed, and in that very room, and knew that he had never loved her to the last, and fell upon his cold breast, passionately weeping. Then a prospect opened, and a river flowed, and a plaintive voice she knew, cried, "It is running on, Floyd. It has never stopped. You are moving with it." And she saw him at a distance stretching out his arms towards her, while a figure such as Walter's used to be, stood near him, awfully serene and still. In every vision, Edith came and went, sometimes to her joy, sometimes to her sorrow, until they were alone upon the brink of a dark grave, and Edith pointing down, she looked and saw what? Another Edith lying at the bottom. In the terror of this dream, she cried out and awoke, she thought. A soft voice seemed to whisper in her ear, "Florence, dear Florence, it is nothing but a dream." And stretching out her arms, she returned the caress of her new mama, who then went out at the door in the light of the gray morning. In a moment, Florence sat up wondering whether this had really taken place or not. But she was only certain that it was gray morning indeed, and that the blackened ashes of the fire were on the hearth, and that she was alone. So passed the night on which the happy pair came home. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.